Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 9th of February. The largest sexual discrimination lawsuit in U.S. history has moved forward against Walmart. Earlier this week, a court approved a class action for seven women who say the retailer was biased in pay and promotions. The plaintiffs say that as many as 1.6 million women who have worked for Walmart in stores in this country since 1998 could join this lawsuit. A judge from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit said, "We hold that the district court acted within its broad discretion in concluding that it would be better to handle this case as class action instead of clogging the federal courts with innumerable individual suits." The plaintiffs alleged denied promotion opportunities, and some are saying also that they were sexually harassed or subject to sexist remarks. The 2-1 ruling by a 3-judge panel took no position on those claims, stressing that the decision only affirmed a lower court ruling to certify the case. We're going to talk about this hour of our program. We'll have two guests with us, starting with Julia Campins, who's Equal Justice Litigation Fellow at the Impact Fund, which is a nonprofit group representing the female plaintiffs. Later, we'll speak with an Associate Professor of Law at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join this conversation. In Milwaukee, it is 227-2050. 227-2050. Julia, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
This started a few years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, almost 7 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
Tell me about the origins. What's it all about?
There are several women who have been experiencing significant discrimination, unable for years to get promoted, noticing that they're getting paid significantly less than their male counterparts, and they just decided to stand up and start the battle.
Mm-hmm. And were sexual harassment charges a part of this as well?
They're not a part of the claims we're talking about today.
I see. So it's been through two courts. Tell me what's happened in 7 years with this case.
Well, in 2004, U.S. District Court District Judge Martin Jenkins certified the class, and then it went up on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit heard oral arguments in August of 2005, and on Tuesday, we finally got an excellent opinion that affirmed the district court.
And what happens from here, Julia?
Well, Walmart has said that it plans to appeal, and the first step is that they will ask a 15-member representative panel of the Ninth Circuit to rehear the case, and that will probably happen in the next few months. And then they also have another bite with the United States Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And if all goes well, then we would go back and have a trial.
And tell me more about what kind of pay differences we're looking at here, what their lack of promotion is in Walmart. What are they saying?
Well, the pay differences are pretty substantial. They're about 5 to 15% is what we've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have at the cashier level, for example, you have women earning below the poverty line and men earning above the poverty line.
Oh,
that's
really
what it comes down to. And at the highest level, you have almost $140,000 pay difference.
Mm-hmm.
This is data as of 2001, because we haven't been able to look into the case very much since then, because it has been frozen, has been stayed since
mm-hmm.
2003.
Mm-hmm.
And promotion, women are spending a longer time in each job and waiting longer to get promoted, if ever. We have one named plaintiff, who for over a decade was waiting for a promotion and was asking for it and finally got it after the lawsuit was filed. But she was waiting for a very, very long time and was receiving excellent reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long haul.
Yeah, considering how slowly all of this is moving through the courts, some of these people could be retired by the time it's decided, right?
Yeah, I mean, no one has retired as of yet. We have some former employees and we have some current employees, and Walmart has a fairly high turnover rate, and so the former employees become a larger and larger portion, but they always have the possibility of returning to the jobs once the opportunities are there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Walmart's statement here that the class action status should be dismissed because the company grants its 3,400 U.S. stores a great deal of independence in their management?
Well, the class allegations show a significant policy of subjective criteria in promotion, and we allege that although it looks like there might be independence, there is a corporate policy. There's the Walmart way. Walmart is a very unified organization in certain ways, and so the stores are run in certain ways where it is across the country. These things are happening in the same way.
Mm-hmm. The Walmart way. What does that mean?
The Walmart way is the corporate. I don't know how to put it. The corporate method. And Walmart is very proud of its culture. So the Walmart way is its culture.
Mm-hmm. And we have seven women who originally were involved in this. How did it move to a class action suit? And how do we get this estimate that there may be 1.6 million women
We're now estimating over 2 million.
Really?
Yes, because it has been a little bit of time since we put those figures out there. More women have come into Walmart, and so we're now estimating over two million rather. And the named plaintiffs are actually at six right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the problems here are company-wide; they're nationwide, and so the way to fix them is to go forward as a class action, because that way we can get relief that fixes the problem, and so. That is why it's necessary to go forward as a class action, so that we can speak as a whole country and correct the problems as a whole country. One woman in one store can't fix the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from a lot of other women, in addition to the six who were the plaintiffs in this case, from Walmart stores around the country?
Yeah, they're not isolated incidents. We have evidence that this, and we have stories of other women all across the country who are experiencing these problems and slightly different problems, but all the same type of sex discrimination and just unable to get ahead despite great reviews and hard work and all sorts of difficult barriers.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for Julie. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Julia Campens is Equal Justice Litigation Fellow at the Impact Fund, which is the nonprofit organization representing the female plaintiffs in this case, which has been around for 7 years now. We're looking at what happened on Tuesday of this week when a federal appeals court moved to approve class action status for women who claim that Walmart was biased in pay and promotion. We're looking at pay scales, according to Julia, differences between men and women anywhere from 5% to 15%, and a lack of ability to climb the corporate ladder. The court approved class action for women who claim the retailer was biased in pay and promotions, and as she says, there could be as many as 2 million women who have worked for Walmart in stores all around this country since 1998 who could join this lawsuit. What do you think? Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 227-2050, 227-2050. I would imagine we may have a few people who have worked at Walmart, be you male or female, who could shed some light on what's happening in your individual store. And we also want to look at, you haven't heard a whole lot about massive sexual discrimination lawsuits in this country for quite some time. Has there been a long period of time before we've had any of these at this kind of level, or is sexual discrimination still a very big problem in this country, and there have been a lot of lawsuits? We'll get caught up on that during the course of the hour. 800-486-8655. Ken from Albany, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello. Who's going to end up paying if there are any damages assessed in this case? I presume the answer is the customer, and can anything be done about that?
Well, I can't speak to where Walmart would find the money if we were to prevail, but I can say that it is a very wealthy company, and it needs to answer for its discrimination, and I hope that the customer doesn't end up paying, because a lot of these women are customers of Walmart as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ken, thanks very much for your call. Lines are open if you'd like to join us. We'd like to hear what your thoughts are about this. Have there been very many sexual discrimination lawsuits, say, in the past 5 years or 10 years, Julia?
Yeah, I'm not really well up on those numbers, but I know that they are out there, and I do see them. And this is a very large one, and one that's getting a lot of press. But there are sex discrimination cases out there. Perhaps your professor knows a little bit more about the numbers.
I'm just thinking as we're talking about this, which is why it caught our attention on Tuesday, that I don't remember there being a whole lot of them, at least prominently displayed in the news in the last few years.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the numbers.
Mm-hmm. How did you become involved in the case, the Impact Fund? Tell me about your organization.
How the organization became involved in the case?
Yeah, and what the organization is all about.
Well, the organization is a class action civil rights organization, and we tend to do a fair amount of employment discrimination. And we have other sex discrimination cases as well, and race discrimination. And we get involved in cases in different ways. Sometimes people come to us with a claim. Sometimes we hear stories and look into it. Sometimes other organizations start a case and call on us, and that's how it happened in this case. An attorney in New Mexico had been looking into this case, and he contacted us to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Do you have details on what the raise schedule is at Walmart? Do employees get raises every year? Is there a review process for employees?
They're scheduled to be up for raises every year. Whether they receive them or not is variable. And that is actually one of the problems in this case. Sometimes women are not receiving raises when they should. And so the pay gap may increase.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine in some of the places, there are so many stores certainly in this country, that it's hard to find other places of employment. Walmart has forced other businesses to go out of business in a lot of small areas.
It can be a strong source of employment for these women, and it's difficult for them when they have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not able to make their rent, pay their bills, because they're not getting paid enough.
Yeah. And where are these women now? I don't know if you said this or not. Are they working still at Walmart or not?
It's a mix. Some of them are still there and some of them are not.
Uh-huh. And when the response came from the court on Tuesday, what kind of response did you get from around the country? This is a country that a lot of people love to hate, but a lot of people shop there as well.
We've been getting very positive response. We have, I've heard good things from around the country. I think the media have been very happy with the news, and because I think it's a great thing for the women of Walmart to be able to speak up and challenge something that's not fair.
Mm-hmm. Lee is next from Madison. Hi, Lee. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I used to work for Stoughton, the Stoughton Walmart, on the remodeling team. And even as a guy, I was subject to harassment by fellow coworkers. They didn't think I was straight. And so I was subject to harassment. And it was pretty violent, and it was pretty bad. And so I want to just say that it's not just about harassment against women, although I do completely believe the allegations. I think it's a culture of harassment, and it's a culture of complete disrespect that's fostered at the company. And I really, really, just kind of outraged that nothing would be done by superiors, and it was just kind of brushed off.
So you brought your complaints to superiors, and they said, sorry?
Yeah, sorry, you know. And, I was being physically threatened and harassed. And, I wanted to go to the Stoughton police. But, I didn't want to make a huge scene, and because this was like good old boys from the town, and, it was like, 100 against one. So, what are you going to do?
Julia.
Yeah, thank you for your comment. I'm really sorry for what you've gone through. We definitely have seen that the managers oftentimes don't do anything or are unable to do something, and complaining just hasn't worked. And that's really unfortunate, because they're the first level.
Mm-hmm. So these women that you're representing, many of them did go to their superiors and say, "Hey, I ought to be getting a raise here."
Oh yes, they went to their superiors. They complained to upper level management, and they were brushed aside.
Mm-hmm. And where did you eventually leave? You just stopped working at your job was done, Lee. So it was over.
Yeah, well, I was on a summer remodeling crew in Stoughton, and the people that the thing I was going to say that I was working for, not that Stoughton store in particular, but I was working for a remodeling crew. So the people that were my superiors were actually Muckety Mucks from Bentonville, you know, Bentonville, Arkansas, you know. So the people that were responsible for overseeing this were corporate, you know, corporate from headquarters. Mm-hmm. And that's what made it all the more, you know, reprehensible that they didn't do anything about it.
Yeah. Thanks, Lee, for your call.
Thank you very much.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our guest, the first half hour, is Julia Campins, Equal Justice Litigation Fellow at the Impact Fund. It's the nonprofit group representing the female plaintiffs in the Walmart case. We have one line open if you want to join us, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Friday, we're going to speak with the editor of Harlem Speaks, A Living History of the Harlem Renaissance. And it looks at the poetry, the literature, the music, the jazz, the art that came out of the Harlem Renaissance. We'll also have a chance to hear some poetry from Langston Hughes and some jazz music from Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong. So that should be a really good hour coming up next hour. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, and Natalie from Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, Natalie.
Hi, Kathleen, and thank you for taking my call. This certainly is a global issue, and I wonder if anyone, I know, of course, Walmart is a global business, and I'm wondering if anybody's addressing this problem on that level.
Thank you for the question. I'm actually not aware of any global lawsuits or otherwise. That doesn't mean that there aren't any out there. I just don't know of them. But hopefully the effect of this lawsuit here will change the policies worldwide.
Yes, great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya from Green Bay. Hi, Tanya.
Hello. I went to school and worked with some of these people who work at the local Walmarts. I know them. And I was wondering if this is more of a class issue than a Walmart issue, because Walmart doesn't hire, you know, most of their people who work there are in the low-mid income bracket. And, you know, you're raised in that bracket and you kind of stay there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we're actually alleging discrimination that goes actually up to higher pay rates even. It's not just the hourly workers, it's the managers who can't make the next management level.
Okay.
So it's throughout various classes.
Okay. If people who shop at Walmart don't see that. So, you know, they see what they see. They see the workers, the people they went to school with. They don't see those upper levels of management. You don't even think about them when you go to walk in Walmart.
Right, it's hard to see the managers.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, what is also very important is that these women who may start out at these cashier levels and work very hard and have excellent reviews or are as stalkers, they have the ability to work their way up the ladder.
Okay.
And the problem is that they're being stopped at each leg on the ladder.
Okay. You said stopped, not stalked.
I said stopped with a P.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. What do you think of some of what Walmart has done here since the cases were filed that you're involved with? The company evidently has established this advisory panel to develop equal employment opportunity. It has appointed a chief diversity officer. And, of course, we have the $4 generic prescription drug program. They have made movements to be more progressive, haven't they?
Well, it looks like there are some efforts out there. We haven't been able to look at the effect on the company, on the women, in over 3 years. So we are looking forward to seeing how the changes that they have made have affected women. But they've also made some changes that we think might have a detrimental effect on women, such as pay caps, which cap the pay at each level.
Mm.
And because we found that women tend to be longer tenured in certain jobs, we think that these caps will have a detrimental effect on women because they will hit them and not be able to go to the next level. So we haven't had a chance to look into any of these, and we're looking forward to looking at them once we get back down to the district court.
Mm-hmm. Julia, why has it taken 7 years for it to get here, and you've still got a long road ahead?
You know, there are various factors. It takes a long time to investigate a case. It takes a long time to argue and have a court decide it. The Ninth Circuit had the case for about a year and a half in between argument and opinion, and there are various reasons for that, which I don't know any of. And so there, you know, law is a process of delay, and that's unfortunate because a lot of these women have been waiting a very, very long time to get their dues, and mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's just the way it works.
Thanks very much for the call, Tanya. We go next to Joan from Beaver Dam. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm glad you have her on this morning because my experience with Walmart happened about 3.5 years, about 87 to middle of 90. And one of the things that I have learned that although they wanted to set standards and limits, you couldn't fraternize with any of the other employers. You couldn't, you know, expect to, you know, a friendship with them like having to dinner or, you know, or something like that. They had somebody that was there as a trainer who was definitely high on some drugs. He was there. He was like lightning. You just had to do everything he said.
Uh-huh.
And after a while, he's the one that, and you know, they are very fussy on drugs and stuff, but you don't know that because there are people that are still on it and how they pass that inspection. Lord knows how they get by. But this person got one of the employees pregnant. And she had a set of twins. And not only that, what did they do with him? Oh, he just got put into another place for 90 days, and then they kept him on. Now, you and I both know that he wasn't cured of his drugs. But he involved an innocent person in something.
Yeah, sounds like a real soap opera, doesn't it, Julia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Thank you so much for being with us. Just briefly tell us what happens from here now.
We are waiting to see if Walmart will appeal this further. They have a deadline coming up for the on-bank review by the Ninth Circuit. That's the 15-member panel.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a few months after that, if they do appeal that way, there's a few months before we would get another decision. And then there would be a few more months until we would know whether they would appeal to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
So with all those appeals, if they do take them, we're looking at a trial within the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. If they decide not to, then we are looking at a trial a little bit sooner.
I see. Do you shop at Walmart?
I actually don't. There's not one in my area.
Would you shop at Walmart?
I don't know. Hmm. I haven't in the past when given the opportunity.
Thanks, Julia.
Thank you very much.
Julia Campin's Equal Justice Fellow at the Impact Fund, a nonprofit group that is representing the female plaintiffs. And in case you're just tuning us in and you missed the story earlier this week, the largest sexual discrimination lawsuit in U.S. history has moved forward against Walmart. The court on Tuesday of this week approved class action for six women who claim that the retailer was biased in pay and promotions. And the plaintiffs are saying that as many as 2 million women who have worked for Walmart since 1998 could join in the lawsuit. The plaintiffs allege denied promotion opportunities. They say that there has been great discrimination in pay, anywhere from 5% to 15% lower salaries than what male counterparts are making. Promotion opportunities have been denied, and although this is not a part of this, some are saying that there is sexual harassment or they were subjected to sexist remarks. So we have one line open for you to join our conversation. We're just changing guests here when we were wondering about, have there been very many sexual discrimination lawsuits in the past? I haven't heard of very many. Maybe there have been a lot that have been somewhat under the radar. The importance of this case, whether it may spark other kinds of cases, why it has taken so long. We'll talk more about class action suits, too, with Melissa Hart now. Professor Hart is an associate professor of law at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Professor Hart, thanks so much for being with us.
Not at all. I'm happy to.
We were wondering, as we were talking the first half hour, if there have been very many sexual discrimination lawsuits in the recent past. Have there or have there not?
Yes, there have been quite a few.
Really?
This kind of lawsuit has grown increasingly common, I would say, over the past decade. But since the advent of Title VII, gender discrimination class actions have been a part of a common form of request for relief in employment discrimination.
Mm-hmm. This has been described as the largest sexual discrimination lawsuit. Is it, or do you have to? Is it a fair description of what it is?
Yes, absolutely. And that flows naturally from the fact that Walmart is the largest employer.
I see.
It's unique in large part because Walmart is unique, not because this is somehow. It's an unusual case. Because of that, but in fact, the kinds of claims of discrimination that these plaintiffs are making are similar to claims of discrimination that plaintiffs have made against many other employers. It's just that not many other employers could have 2 million class members because they don't have that many employees.
Exactly. It is one huge company, isn't it? It is big. What about, though, this idea that Walmart has said here that they don't discriminate and you can't take them on as a whole as a company because they've got 3,400 or maybe more than that stores in this country and all of those stores operate somewhat independently?
I think Walmart's correct to focus on that as the hardest thing about the case. Certainly, there is a tendency in the courts to try to limit this kind of class action and any kind of employment discrimination suit to a single plant or a single supervisor within a company and to focus on did that specific supervisor or that specific plant operate under discriminatory policies or practices. In this case, the plaintiff's lawyers really looked at what Walmart's central policies were that were creating the kind of conditions that allowed this discrimination to pervade the company. And so while on the one hand they are challenging decisions of individual supervisors, and that is certainly an important aspect of the claim, they also are challenging Walmart's corporate culture and its central policies that not only did not discourage, but really turned a blind eye to the limitations on women's opportunities and women's equality at the company. And they're saying that's the problem. And if Walmart as a company didn't do that, the individual supervisors also wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the argument that gets you around the hugeness of the company and the geographic diversity of the company.
But potentially, and I know that there's a long way to go here, but potentially they would have to pay a huge amount of money, wouldn't they, with all these people involved in the class action suit?
Yes. And that's obviously, again, part of what drives Walmart and others crazy about the suit is damages size is sort of inconceivable. If you have 2 million class members and they allege that over the course of since 1996, I guess, 1996, I believe, there have been pay inequities and promotion inequities that, of course, themselves have contained pay disparities. So you're looking at back pay to try to correct for a decade of damages and then potentially punitive damages. It's hard to even imagine what damages would look like.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about the fact that Walmart has requested, it has appealed this, so they will go to a 15-member panel of some kind?
Yes. What happens in, you have the district court decision, and in the class certification process, there's a special federal rule that allows, normally in a case you can't appeal till it's over.
Mm-hmm.
But in the class certification context, there's a special rule that says before the case is over, you can appeal the class certification decision. That was just actually added to the federal rules a couple of years ago. So Walmart used that and appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and an appeal first goes to a panel of three judges. And then on every other circuit in the country, actually, if you're going to take what's called an in-bank appeal, it will just go to the whole circuit. So if you were in New York, which is the Second Circuit, and they decided to hear it in bank, it would just be all of the judges on the Second Circuit. But mm-hmm. because the Ninth Circuit is so large and has so many judges, the in-bank hearings don't go to the whole court. They go to a panel of 15 judges. So it goes from the three that have already heard it to the 15 for consideration. And in a case like this where there was a strong dissenting opinion, and the Ninth Circuit has a culture of taking things in bank, I think there's a good chance that that in bank request will be granted.
Mm-hmm. And should Walmart lose when it comes to that panel, then would it be appealed to the Supreme Court? Is that right?
Well, then they can petition for certiorari to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court hears somewhere between 80 and 100 cases a year, and it gets thousands of petitions for certiorari every year. So while the court could decide to hear this case, and certainly there are reasons that it might. It actually raises a number of issues that there has been disagreement among the circuits on for several years. There's no certainty at all that the court would hear it.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest this half hour is Melissa Hart, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Colorado at Boulder. We're talking about the largest sexual discrimination lawsuit in U.S. history, which moved forward earlier this week against Walmart when a court approved class action for six women who claimed that the retailer was biased in pay and promotions. As many as 2 million women who have worked for Walmart since 1998 could join in this lawsuit. What do you think? Couple lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Friday, the editor of Harlem Speaks, A Living History of the Harlem Renaissance. All right, we go to Cheryl next. Hi, Cheryl, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Cheryl, and I have a question regarding the discriminatory practice of forcing female employees to take one day of vacation before they're allowed to take sick leave. And any woman who's a mother knows that there are many times when you have to stay home with a child. So Walmart forces you to take a vacation day before you can access your sick leave, and then counts sick leave as an unexcused absence. I'd be interested in your comments, and I'll take it off the air.
All right. That's not part of this lawsuit, though, Melissa, so I don't expect you to understand the issue, but do you want to comment on that?
Sure. I think I do understand the issue, and although it's not part of this lawsuit, I think, again, it's part of what this lawsuit represents as a trend in litigation. Mm-hmm. There's an increasing attention to the fact that there are all kinds of policies that are facially neutral, but that have, as the caller said, a clear effect on women, not just as women, but as mothers, mm-hmm. and that workplaces need to start acknowledging that these policies don't work for working mothers, and that working mothers are a reality that workplaces have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this lawsuit is about. And it's true that this policy isn't part of the lawsuit, but I think it is part of the problem.
Hmm. So it actually could be part of another lawsuit, right?
Yep, absolutely.
I wonder if there's a movement underway to do just that?
There are a lot of lawsuits in the country. There's a kind of litigation that the plaintiff's lawyers refer to as maternal wall cases, saying, I mean, the Walmart class action that we're talking about today is what people call a glass ceiling case. It's talking about the glass ceiling that limits women's opportunities to rise in the company. But maternal wall lawsuits, which are becoming increasingly common, focus on policies exactly like that the caller is referring to, that limit women's opportunities as mothers in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Take a day of vacation before you get your sick leave. Ooh. Thanks.
You're not going to have much vacation at the end.
No, I guess you wouldn't, would you, if you have a child, and particularly young children who get sick more often.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Thanks, Cheryl, for the call. Susan is next from Coon Valley. Hi, Susan.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. Just a comment and then a question. I find it hard to believe, as was mentioned earlier, that corporate headquarters would not be able to monitor to some degree, some of these 2,000 and some stores or whatever that Walmart has in terms of setting their guidelines for hiring and pay mm-hmm. increases and whatever. I mean, that's a corporation, and, you know, the trickle-down phenomena is predominant in this country. The other thing is, I'm wondering if any of the clients you're representing are retired people that have been hired by Walmart for employment. Thank you.
Well, first, I'm not one of the lawyers on the case, so I am not representing anyone, and I don't know exactly whether any of the plaintiffs who have gone to the lawyers litigating the case fall into that category. But certainly, given the number of retired employees who go to Walmart as a in retirement source of income, it seems likely that there would be class members who fell into that category.
Mm-hmm.
And on in terms of the monitoring issue, I think again that's exactly what this lawsuit is pushing on. Walmart monitors everything. It's an incredibly centralized, organized, controlled company. That's part of why it's so successful. So. Part of what the lawsuit is asking is, why not this? If everything else, how is it possible that you weren't willing to keep some control on the kinds of decisions that were being made that limited women's opportunities?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Susan, very much for the call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join our conversation about the largest sexual discrimination lawsuit in history against Walmart, which moved forward on Tuesday of this week. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee 227-2050. Michael is next from Hilbert. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
First of all, I enjoy your, always enjoy your public radio programs.
Great.
You usually get both sides of an issue. Anyway, sort of a question, and I think the last caller sort of went that same direction, and that is, do you feel the board of directors are directly responsible for this alleged discrimination, should it be proven to be true, and that they should be held responsible, seeing as how they're the ones that set the corporate philosophies, so on and so forth, and it's their responsibility to make sure that those are enacted?
Title VII law doesn't hold boards of directors liable for this kind of conduct. It focuses on employers, and the board of directors wouldn't be defined as the employer in this case. So as this lawsuit is brought, I don't believe the board of directors would be responsible. It certainly seems to me that one of the things that should be explored is how boards of directors of Walmart and lots of big corporations, how seriously they're taking this question and the impact that it has. I mean, again, coming back to damages, this lawsuit is going to have potentially a huge impact on Walmart's value to shareholders, and people should be, I mean, that's what the board of directors is accountable for. So,
do you know what happened to their stock on Tuesday when this news came out?
I believe it went up a little bit.
Hmm.
I believe it went up by, I'm trying to, it was maybe 12 cents or something.
Hmm.
I don't understand that.
Right, right. It is sort of hard to know.
Well, Walmart is impervious.
Essentially, the consumer will pay the price. It's not necessarily the stockholder. I mean, it might be initially in the short term, but the consumer pays the price in the long run.
Yes, I that's, again, that's one of the hard things about Walmart. I think that Walmart is a remarkable company in much of what it does. Its ability to had a tremendous impact on, for example, limiting packaging of goods in its stores, which it's done for financial reasons, but that's had great environmental impact. It's so huge that it can do really wonderful things. It's also so huge that its negative conduct can have a tremendous impact. And one of the things that's complicated here is that it's provided these very low prices, and it may be that some of how it does that is by treating workers less well than it should. And it raises really a question of social values. Can we acknowledge that we may have to pay higher prices in order to have workers treated the way that we think they should be.
And then what does that do to your rock-bottom price at Walmart that makes everybody want to shop there?
It may just be that prices can't be that low with workers treated well.
The bottom goes up.
Yeah.
But I also think that Walmart has improved, especially in their initial philosophy and approach. They went into markets that were completely ignored by the Ben Franklins, the Five and Dimes, in the early days, and they provided goods and services that were available at a price that they couldn't get anywhere, mom and pops included. And the other comment, and then I'll get off the air, but the other comment is that, a lot of people think Walmart, because it is so huge, they are a Target, but they think that mom and pop somehow, being put out of business, that somehow the employees that were a part of the mom-and-pop organizations were somehow treated better. And I personally don't see that. Living in a small rural area, I see where mom-and-pop pay their employees very, very low wages and provide no benefits other than maybe immediate price relief on some of the goods they buy. Mm-hmm. But thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Walmart did, and we'll do a show with them down the road here, did send out a press release on Tuesday of this week seeking further appellate review in gender class action lawsuit. And they proceeded to list their efforts and achievements in the area of equal opportunity, talking about being one of the 50 best companies for Latinas to work for by Latina Style magazine, named one of the top 40 U.S. companies for diversity by Black Enterprise magazine, establishing a $25 million private equity fund for women and minority-owned businesses to empower entrepreneurs. They've established this Office of Diversity, et cetera. So they're out there. They're out there front and center trying to say, wait a second, we're still we're a company that values diversity. And I found it interesting that they wanted to highlight all of those issues. They didn't look very much at – they didn't talk a whole lot about pay levels, though.
Right. And interestingly, a lot of they've actually made a lot of positive changes since this lawsuit was filed, and I think that's one of the things that sometimes gets ignored. If you look at the timing of a lot of their diversity efforts, it's been after the lawsuit was filed, and they've also made some headway in monitoring pay and promotion matters since the lawsuit was filed. The lawsuit has already made a difference. Even if it went away tomorrow, it would have made a difference.
Oh, that's interesting. So you think that they've made great strides here? Have they corrected the problem?
I don't know enough to say they've corrected the problem, but I don't know enough to say that they haven't either. They can't have corrected the problem for the time before they instituted the new policies, and that's, again, part of what the lawsuit's getting at.
So. Right, right. Tell me when something becomes, there's a lot been made of, well, this would tangle the courts, so we've decided to do a class action. When does something become a class action? When is that appropriate? Who makes that decision?
Well, I guess two different people make that decision. First, a plaintiff's lawyer or a group of plaintiff's lawyers will look at a circumstance and say this makes sense to pursue as a class, and what they'll consider is the number of possible plaintiffs. At some point, if you don't have a class action, if each person is individually in court, then each person's entitled to have a lawyer. So imagine this. If you had this case with 1.5 million women in the case, or even let's say it ended up being a smaller number, let's say it ended up being just, 300,000 women in the case, and every single one of them got to have a lawyer in the court, and every single one of them had to be served with papers when it was filed, that's not going to make sense.
Right.
So that's a kind of situation where a class makes sense. And in a case like this, in a situation where what's being sought is injunctive relief, meaning relief that forces the employer to change policies or practices, it means it's going to affect everyone in the workplace. It's not just about one person's right to have gotten a promotion or to have a different pay scale. And so that's the kind of thing that makes a class make sense. So a plaintiff's lawyer will look at it and decide that they think this is a case that should be pursued as a class, and they file it that way. They make that first decision. And then they bring it to the court, and the court has to look at it and say, I think this makes sense to pursue as a class, or I disagree with you. This is an individual. These can be pursued as individual cases.
Lines are open if you want to join us. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to Jim from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Well, it seems to me that this is just an illustration of a larger point, which is that The one of the main con manipulations that conservatives use is that we didn't know, and in reality, the reality is we don't care. We know, but we just don't care. The we worship in America a four-letter word called more. If I just get more money and more power, I'll be more complete. and so this is what they did here. You know, they deliberately and consciously set out to rip off these women. And this is reflected in many issues, and I'll just give one and then get off the air, is that, for example, we're reading in the paper today that one in 150 kids suffer from autism.
Mm-hmm.
And does this possibly have some connection with the fact that environmental laws aren't protected, aren't enforced because people want to make more money? Same type of thing. They know, they just don't care.
Hmm. Professor Hurt.
I think, although I agree that that is a problem in society, I think in this case, again, this comes back to the last caller, one of the things that's hard is, while more money may have been part of what was going on here, I do think Walmart's focus on low prices has led it not only in the context of gender, but really in all employment policies to have employment practices that are more problematic than other employers because labor costs are the highest cost in a business, and Walmart's trying so hard to keep its prices so low that it foregoes a lot of really what are necessary labor costs in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
So it may partly be more money for the board of directors or something, but really I think with Walmart it's low prices.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Jim, for the call. And yet, when you look at, there is this huge disparity between workers and those who are at the top in Walmart. The people who own Walmart consistently rank among the top three or the top four richest people in the world, don't they?
Yes. Yes. So this is clearly not a charitable business
mm-hmm.
in any way. So I don't mean to undercut that, I do think they're so complicated in the context of Walmart because of those competing demands.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim, for your call. Garrett is next. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I work in an industry where we get inspected the work we do in office and the place we're in, and a lot of times the better we look, the less the inspector looks. And I would be curious to wonder that if Walmart, with their diversity, is doing the exact same thing. The better they look to everybody else, the more they can hide, more or less put a Band-Aid over what is really wrong. And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
That's definitely one of the concerns that a number of people have raised recently, again, not only about Walmart, but about all kinds of employers, that you see increasing numbers of diversity programs and training programs in the workplace and different initiatives. And the question has been raised pretty regularly in the scholarship recently whether this is just an effort to avoid looking like you're discriminating or whether it's really an effort to end discrimination. It's an empirically testable question. Do these programs work? And there's been some interesting scholarship recently that has focused on what kinds of programs actually work to eliminate obstacles to advancement for women and minorities, and what kinds of programs make a company look good but don't seem to do much. And it seems pretty clear that programs that hold managers accountable for decisions and that really have a single person or a task force in a workplace that pays attention to what's happening and that goes out and asks questions if there's a particular part of a company that never seems to promote women or minorities, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Let me look at the eligible files. That's what makes a difference, where having just kind of initiatives and trainings and awards doesn't end up making the kind of difference that really is going to matter to working people.
Mm-hmm. Time for maybe one more phone call. Kathy from Milwaukee. Hi.
I just wanted to say the University of Wisconsin Extension itself was discriminating against women. Extension particularly because women were home economists and men were ag and hort in about 80s, 85. And one woman brought a lawsuit and won it, and all of a sudden all the women had pay raises.
Mm-hmm.
Litigation makes a huge difference. People who, the efforts to cut back on litigation in this country or the criticisms of lawyers and litigation in this country, I think often miss and forget that one lawsuit like that can change lives for lots of people in ways that should have happened earlier.
Mm-hmm. And can you, from the earlier court decisions in this case, Professor Hart, get a sense of what's going to happen with this? Do you think that this discrimination will hold, or could it be overturned?
I don't know. It's a really hard question. This is a hard case. Mm. I think that has to be acknowledged. This was not a slam dunk for the plaintiffs in the district court or in the Court of Appeals. The fact that it took the Court of Appeals 18 months to issue this decision from argument was argued in August 2005, and the decision obviously just came out this week. It demonstrates, I think, how hard it was to think about through these issues. And it's unpredictable because the panel of the Ninth Circuit that will hear it in bank will be picked randomly. It somewhat is going to depend on the perspectives of the judges who look at it and how they see these issues.
Right.
There is a lot of subjective evaluation in what judges do, just like there was in what the managers at Walmart did.
Thanks, Professor Hart, for being with us.
Thank you.
Professor Melissa Hart is an associate professor of law at the University of Colorado at Boulder, talking this hour about the largest sexual discrimination lawsuit in history moving forward against Walmart this week. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Mimi Notstein for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for your calls. Copies of this show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program number is 29D. News is ahead, and we'll have more Friday morning conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute before 10 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.